Welcome back, everybody, to another version of Call That Girl's Remote Support Show. I'm Lisa Hendrickson, your hostess, and this is show number 7. Welcome to the show, folks. I wanted to start the show off today by talking about why I do the show, which might make sense to some new listeners. And just keep in mind that I do have 6 other shows listed on the podnuts.com/CTG site. So if you're interested in learning about remote support, I just want to tell everybody that every story I talk about and everything in the beginning and the, you know, the little, here's what the this week's updates are all done remotely. No on-site and no people coming to me. I have completely changed my business around to be remote support only, and I'm, you know, I think I'm being successful at it, to be honest. So if anybody out there is interested in just, you know, wanting to do remote support, it's completely possible, and it's not hard. You just have to learn to change your interview process, which we're going to talk about later. This segment is about marketing, so we'll talk about it at the end of the show. And just to let folks know, I always start the show off by doing some updates, and then I have a few tips thrown in, and then we have a topic of the week. So to get people excited about remote support, I'm not sure who's listening right now. You could be a hobbyist. You could be an IT person at a corporation. You could have your own shop, your own store, your own home business. You could be a student in networking. Just somebody who's interested in listening about remote support, and you might be, you know, thinking about taking it to the next level. I do have a remote support ebook out there that I am selling for just $10 now, just for the listeners. And that's way less than what my normal price is of $49. But I think that to add value to the people who have been listening and they're, you know, kind of playing with the idea, the $10 ebook is a great deal. And I cover everything from customer service to how to technical tips. There's a full how to do it, you know, if you want to follow a guide. And there's just lots of other information in the book that's real helpful for somebody who's already doing remote support and wants some fine tuning, or someone who wants to take it from the ground up and get going and service their own customers with remote support. The show's topic this week is marketing. So later on in the show, we'll talk about some good things that work for me and what's been consistent and constantly working. All right, folks, moving ahead, I want to talk about the fan mail. I am loving the fan mail coming in. So if you've got anything you want to tell me, feel free to email me at lisa@podnuts.com. One fan in particular kind of made me chuckle a little bit. He said basically he loves listening to my show because it's all killer and no filler. I jump right in and I don't spend a lot of time, you know, talking about things that aren't on topic maybe or whatever, but I'm thrilled to hear that he likes that I dig in right away, with the exception of today, just a little bit, but I'll be getting to it soon. And then I got another person that said, I would like to hear more about how you actually fix these issues, Lisa, so if you can, go into a little more detail. So my week's updates here, I'm going to add in a little more detail. You know, as usual, I try to tell you how I made money or how I lost money or things I learned, but I'm also going to add in some fixes as well. So let's get started. I had a lot of junkware removal calls. And the thing is, I don't like calling them virus removals anymore because there's no viruses ever. It's just junk. And the junk just doesn't stop coming with these calls. I tell you, I'm getting quite used to seeing the same junk. So I kind of got my method down on how I remove the junk. And I got it down to where I could probably get rid of it in about 8 to 10 minutes. But then there's the extra time of scanning with the tools we use and whatnot. So my one call I had, I kind of forgot about this new little managed search engines that Firefox has, which, you know, if you do a junkware removal, you have to do every browser and you have to make sure you get all the junk out. You even check the properties of the launch because the little sneaky conduits get right in there too. So you have to, you know, go make sure it's not launching a conduit search from the application that you're clicking on. But I did this junkware removal. Everything went well. And then the client called back 2 days later and says, you know, I'm still getting conduit. And I said, that just, I mean, I did a great job. And lo and behold, Firefox has a new little, maybe it isn't new and I just didn't catch it before, but it's called Manage Search Engines up in the upper right corner. And you can click on a little tiny down arrow and see all the search engines. So I just, of course, remoted in, did a quick peek and realized that, and removed all the junk. Which, by the way, all the junk was still in there. I was like, I just don't get it. But anyway, that was just a tiny little snag. But it actually helped me a little bit because now in my next junkware removal, I will make sure to check that little box. And I think most of you that are doing junkware removals every day or often are finding that it's kind of funny. You'll do a junkware cleanup. Next thing you know, the client calls back 1 or 2 days later. Yeah, I got all these new pop-ups and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, you know, I did a good job. I know I did a good job. I know it. Well, first thing I do with those jobs is I go right to the remove, add remove programs and go look to see what they've installed since I helped them. And 9 times out of 10, which is seeming to, you know, maybe I won't say 9 times out of 10, but the few calls I've had that do that, I always see that they've already updated their flash or some other junk or they've installed something. iTunes is popular. Same with Firefox. They went and reinstalled Firefox for some reason. And if you look at the install date, you'll find that they did it after you helped them. So at this point, you're kind of having the guilt of, well, okay, I already removed your junk, but now I have to go remove your junk again because you downloaded something. So where is the rebilling process here going to happen? And I haven't been rebilling people. I, at this point, take it as a lesson learned that I need to say to them at the end of each call to say, now, be careful on the internet, clicking on things for Flash, Firefox, iTunes, whatever. Make sure you're going to the legitimate site. And that little 5 minutes I, or couple minutes I take with people hopefully will point them in a good direction when they go download and to not download more junk. I haven't yet started saying I'm going to rebill you, but I'm going to start because it's, I mean, it only took me a few minutes to clean up the junk, but the point is that it shouldn't be happening. But people are doing it, and I've watched people, you know, say, well, I went to go get Firefox, and of course they click on the ad in Google, which goes to a bad site, and you know, it's just real common. So the lesson learned of the day is to close your remote jobs with, you know, kind of just giving a little lesson there for them to learn and to remind them, be careful when they're surfing the internet. Now, strangely, in these last couple of weeks here, I had two different calls for things that got fixed that I didn't really have to fix, and I would call them miracle fixes. One client had a bad Windows update, and she said her Excel broke. So when she tried to repair the Excel, of course it wouldn't repair. So I said, well, let me try System Restore, which is my favorite, you know, fix if an update goes bad. And that didn't fix it either. And you know what? I just brain farted. Excuse me, this particular job, I'm gonna take back what I said, but this was not a miracle fix. This one here, what happened is the Windows update had changed an add-on in her Office program. So I went into the Excel options and disabled all of the add-ins. And then when she tried, what she was trying to do is run a report out of BCM, and the report then kind of worked. So I got a new error and I went into Google and searched for that error and it said I had to put in or she had to take out some special character and then her BCM could take the report and export it to Excel. I'm really sorry, that probably sounded very horrible. But in my notes here, I had a Windows update and with the other one, I'm really sorry. But if you just listen to what I said, you know, a Windows update did crash something. But then it broke something else, and that's when I go to Google and try to find an answer, and voila. Anyway, that's a typical kind of call I get. But the other client that did have the Windows issue, his keyboard had stopped working, and one of my techs was working on this one and told me the story. It actually turned out to be a virus removal, but a Windows update also, we think, was causing the keyboard to not work because of some research we did. And all of a sudden, out of the blue, when we were kind of put that ticket on a research call because the client had an external keyboard, he emailed me one day and said, you know, all of a sudden, Lisa, the keyboard just started working. And I'm like, you didn't do anything? He said, nope. And I said, well, that's kind of one of those things that I tell folks before we start a call, If they say something isn't working, I do manage the expectations of the call better by saying, I'm not going to guarantee that I'm going to fix this problem. And I said, Windows updates are kind of crazy. And sometimes a Windows update won't take, give it a couple weeks, all of a sudden it takes, and little problems are fixed. And so he was one of those kind of people we just kind of said, let's just wait on a little bit since he didn't need the keyboard to be, at that time. And so far, it's been good. The expectations I put out there with people when they call and say, yeah, I've got all these problems, I say, well, we should start with the tune-up and see what happens because that more than likely does fix a lot of the problems that people have. But you have to close the call by saying, I'm not going to spend 4 hours trying to fix a Windows update because that just does not happen. I do not include fixing Windows updates in my tune-ups, period. And if people are like, well, what should I do? I said, well, you can start working with Microsoft or I can, but you got to bill me or I got to bill you. And people have just offered to not, fix them right now. And we put it on a research ticket sometimes too. But 9 times out of 10, again, the Windows update just fixes itself. I've noticed that. And then I did have another lady that, again, just the, she called in with the virus removal. And her computer would never shut down on its own. It just sat there at the logging off screen, which I thought was kind of weird because I'm like, it's usually a fix, some little snaggy thing. And I did a few Google checks on her model of her computer and what she was running, and I couldn't figure it out. Did a good tune-up, and actually she just had a couple little bugs, and did I disabled some of her startup issues or the startup in the MS config, and it took two reboots, but the second time it finally restarted on its own. And I also did some Windows updates in that call. So back to what we were talking about, Windows updates just sometimes fix themselves and fix minor problems. I think it's important to keep Windows updates in your tune-ups or in your virus removals. And I know a lot of techs don't do Windows updates in their virus removals, but like I said, I kind of call them all virus removal slash junkware now. It's kind of hard to bill somebody for a virus removal if you're just, cleaning out with Malwarebytes and CCleaner. You're not having to do anything hardcore except just manually remove junk, and that's all a lot of it is nowadays. Okay, let's see, what else do I have? I had another Windows 8 local account problem. And you know what? This Windows 8 is really starting to bother me. When people call in and they say I have Windows 8, it's not difficult to fix the problems, but it's just really difficult to tell people, you better back your shit up. Because you know what? I've seen Windows 8 completely hose up someone's life. Just rebooting wrong, and all of a sudden it says factory reset or restore, whatever, and it takes your computer back. And that happened to a client of mine in January. And so I'm kind of nervous sometimes when I take these calls because I mean, I just don't know the apps that well, and I don't understand what all this new safe mode and everything doesn't work how it should be, and this file history backup, and it's kind of like I troubleshoot so much that I just don't know if I have the time to dedicate to learn it all when I think that Windows 8 is going to be junk soon. So this lady called and said, I have a Microsoft account on my Windows 8 when I log in, and I'd like it to not be that because I can't do anything if I'm not online. I said, well, we'll switch you to a local account. And that took me, hardly any time at all to go in. I do know that setting, how to get into there to do that, because I had to do that on my own computer. But then she had some snaggy thing with her streaming her Office that came up next. And I was like, because we took it off a Microsoft account, moved it to local, it was kind of a big headache, to be honest with you. We had to redo everything, her Outlook, her Office, and it turned into about an hour, drama when it should have been just like a 5 minute drama. Yeah, it took quite a while, so it's a heads up for somebody. And she was doing the Office streaming and the whole thing too, so it kind of snagged her up quite a bit. She wasn't angry or nothing, just understands that Microsoft is kind of, changing the game and it's not so easy anymore because it's not local on your computer like it should be. And I tried to fix that Office by doing the quick repair, no win. Tried to do the online repair, no joy. Did not cut through either one. So my theory was uninstall, reboot, reinstall. And that was the best way to fix that because that repair was just a waste of time. So we're going to talk about marketing here and what kind of works for me really well. I can't say this works for everybody because everybody's in different situations. You might have a store and you're doing traditional marketing and it's working for you. You might be an at-home business and your whatever marketing you're doing is working. Remote support is a little bit different because you can't just, put out a TV ad and say we only do remote support, because that's just how we support people. So this year I skimmed down all my marketing just down to like three or four things. And here's a huge tip for people that are having stores and or you have a home office or whatever you do, is change your interview style first of all. So like let's say you were doing a lot of on-site work or you had people come to you and bring in, but they always call, let's say. Well, if you change your interview style to, kind of listen to the call and determine if it's software. That's your tip is if it's a software issue and you can fix it remotely, start telling your clients, I can probably fix that over the internet if I could just remote in. Now, since they're a current client already, you already built the trust with them. So you don't have to, trust, they already know. And I think that's been a big issue for techs is that they're like, well, people aren't going to trust me remoting in. And I will just be honest, I have almost no problems getting people to let me remote in their computer. And these are pure strangers. I do Google National for my Outlook work. So I've got people that just give me their credit card and I go in and fix it, So you already built trust with your clients, so that's your win already. Start slow and start turning your clients into remote clients and start thinking of every call that comes in, does that have to sit on my bench for 3 days? When you can remote in and maybe fix it in a half hour. Now, a lot of techs think, well, that's taking up my time as I'm just on their machine. But the beauty of it is that my stellar tech I used to have, he got really good at doing remotes and running benches. So if you're in a remote job and you're doing, let's say, two or three tune-ups or virus removals, you know what you have going on each computer. They're just like virtual benches for you. You could be doing three remotes and you got three or four on your bench. And I think the bench work, it's sitting there. A lot of people, don't think of getting a tune-up or virus removal done so quickly, but it really does get done quickly. My average, I think, virus removal time or junkware removal is about an hour and a half. And then I can manage that by telling clients, look, I need a little more time. And as long as you manage the expectations of the time, they don't care. Well, so anyway, the topic again is marketing. I'm getting off topic a little bit. But, interview, change your interview style. Okay. And that'll help you start securing remote support clients. Once you get more comfortable, you can start upselling more things, as you move on. The other thing I've done pretty successfully since 2008 is I've run newsletters. So if you're not running newsletters, you probably should. Get your clients' emails and put them into MailChimp or Constant Contact or iContact or whatever, and start just sending out some little tips, tips, warnings, little interesting facts about computers, things that your clients would like. It's top of mind. Newsletter marketing is cheap and it's effective. And that is where I get a lot of my clients that have helped for the past 5 to 7 years because they are on the list. And then remember, once they call, you turn them into a remote client. I also am big on these next three: social media, Google, and LinkedIn. And before I get talking about those three, I'm just going to kind of just say that they all stem from my blogs. So the blog is the heart of all of my Google, LinkedIn, and social media work. And what I do is I have a WordPress website and I go out and put out a blog. And when I'm blogging, I come up with a creative title and some good tags that will help in the search engine. So when people are searching, some of my blogs might have 5 or 10 tags on it. Just depends on what I want to try to be found for in Google. But I create the blog and then I tag it and title it and give it a little SEO love. Now that blog can be used 4 different ways. I just said three, but I also put them in my newsletters. I also push them out to Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. And some of them I try to use as a full discussion in LinkedIn and the groups I'm in. And, overall, what you're doing is bringing exposure back to your website. Okay, so if you go out to LinkedIn and you push this blog out as an update on your LinkedIn updates, your people in your contact list will see that. And you have to remember that on LinkedIn, there's hundreds of updates a day. Because let's say you've got 500 people in your contact list, you're not going to see all 500 people's updates. It just rotates. So I recommend on LinkedIn that you do maybe 2 to 3 day, just go push out. And you also don't have to push out a blog. You could push out just, hey, you know what? Got a virus? Give me a call today. Put your phone number out there. That little update goes in the people's feeds, which is equal to a Facebook wall post or status update, I guess it's called. And, it's just marketing. Bling, bling, bling. People are online. They see you. Start putting out there. I can fix it remotely today. Put call to action in those updates because your network, they already know you. The trust is already there. Now, for people that engage in quantity LinkedIn, like I do, I've got almost 7,000 contacts. I do not know all those people. But the point is I've spent years building my network up, and I like telling my story of my blogs and my status updates to those people. So for me, keeping pushing those out every day keeps the calls coming in because not only does my network get to see it, but then they share it. And they share my stories and they also tell people's stories. So I've gotten calls from people on LinkedIn that say, Lisa, I found you on LinkedIn. One of my colleagues is blah, blah, blah. So me and this person that just called me aren't connected on LinkedIn and we're not in a similar group together. But someone shared my information. And sometimes, they don't even know who they are. So it can kind of go a little thicker. At the bottom of the show notes, there's a link on, I wrote a story about 10 ways why you don't need to, or excuse me, 10 reasons why you don't need to upgrade to the paid LinkedIn. A lot of people think, well, it's going to get me more money. It's going to bring me better networking. And it just doesn't. So go read that little LinkedIn thing I wrote. And it's kind of amusing as well as a learning for you. I highly recommend getting into LinkedIn. It's just huge. Your business clients are there. The residential market is there. All these people are on LinkedIn that work in corporate jobs have home computers. And then the other half of those people that you're connected to have their own business or work in small business and they need to hire you too. Okay, I'm gonna circle back to this blog thing with Google. So here's a little tip for people that live in small towns or in rural areas and they're struggling with I've read online on a few forums that they're like, well, look, I live in a small, area and I can't market to the big towns. You absolutely can. You got to put a little more work into it, but I do not live in Minneapolis right now and I get tons of Minneapolis clients. Granted, it's a lot of it's from my LinkedIn, but I also have spent a lot of time with my blogs making them good on Google. So I live about an hour and a half away from Minneapolis. I've created blogs with Computer Repair Minneapolis, Minnesota in the title. Some of my other blogs are Virus Removals, Minneapolis, Minnesota. Data Backup, Minneapolis, Minnesota. Microsoft Exchange, Minneapolis, Minnesota. Those blog titles will rank you higher in Google searches. So when people go to Google and type in the general, what they need fixed, where they need it fixed, you'll pop up. And you don't have to put in there that you service it only remotely. What they'll do is they'll just call. And if you don't have a local number to the big city you're nearby, get a Google one or something. There's nothing wrong with that. I see a lot of people are doing that now anyway. But, they call you, you interview right, you land them as a remote support client. They don't even need to know you don't live there. And I do this all the time with my Minneapolis people. And it's not, you're not lying. It's just because you service Minneapolis, so you put it on the blog. Whatever town, you service that town remotely. And you can land that client remotely. And I've been doing work with, I don't know, for well over a year now with people I've never met. They've paid me a lot of money for project work, and it just gets done. I think people are very used to this virtual remote world now, especially in a bigger city. So the people out in the small towns and rural, you might have a better shot at landing the city clients, especially if you just think about your rates, Do a competition check and make sure that your prices are equivalent to the city people. If you want to try to land them a little better, lower them down just a smidge, maybe. but I know that people will pay for quality and service. So pricing to me has never really been an issue. You got to have good quality and good service, and people will keep on calling. But let's see. So to review, my newsletters are good, consistent. Get those going. Make sure you're out on social media. Do blog pushing and just quick updates. Call to action. Need it done today. Be like that. Say things like that. It works. And with LinkedIn, go check out the show note, or not the show notes, in the show notes, the link I put out there. It'll be very helpful for you to learn a little bit more about how you can use LinkedIn. A lot of people are scared of it. There's no need to be scared of it. It's awesome. And I really don't get a lot of clients from Twitter and Facebook, to be honest with you. Okay, folks, this is a shorter show today, but go ahead and check me out on Twitter if you want to follow. I kind of closed down my Twitter followers. I'm following a whole bunch, but I, no, excuse me, the other way around. I stopped following non-tech things. I'm going to try to only do tech on Twitter from now on. That at call that girl. Connect with me there. You can email me, lisa@podnuts.com, and LinkedIn/in/call that girl, and on Facebook/call that girl help desk. Please remember to donate to the Podnuts Network. I donate monthly, and all the money that they receive helps go to keep the staff there happy and wanting to continue to put out these great podcast shows. I highly recommend it. And next week, the show, I think, is going to be when repairs go wrong or how to do good promotions and newsletters. I'm not sure yet, but either way, those are the next two topics for shows 8 and 9. Thank you, folks, for listening. Send me some feedback and have a good week.